What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we are full steam ahead in the NBA playoffs right now, the conference semifinals. We have a couple series that are just tied neck and neck, and then we have a couple series that are runaways at this current point in time. So let's get right into the week that was the NBA conference semifinals, beginning with the series versus the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. Right now, this has just been straight up domination by the New York Knicks. Not really surprised, because like I said, I felt like the Indiana Pacers were going to make it a series. And even though the Knicks are up 2-0 right now, things could still change, and the Pacers still are making it a series. So let's start off with what happened in Game 1 earlier in the week. The Knicks got a big win, 121-117. There were some questionable calls towards the end with the refs just a couple of things that happened. A couple of favorable calls went in the favor of the Knicks, but you know, at the end of the day, you know me and refs, I don't really always blame that. I do think the Knicks defense really clamped it down in the fourth quarter. And speaking of the fourth quarter, that is when Jalen Brunson did what he do. He went off for 43 points. That was his fourth 40-point playoff game in a row. That puts him in a very rare company. Only four other players have done that before. So that says a lot about Jalen Brunson. And this dude has just been a beast all season long, but really, he is proving his worth. He has proven that he is the dude, because so far this playoff run has been awesome for him. And then in Game 2, it was just all Knicks all night. They got the win 130-121. The Pacers did make it an interesting series, but really for the most part, the Knicks really took control of Game 2 and then really just had the lead the entire way and then ran away with it. Brunson had 29 points. He did leave the game for a brief period of time with an injury. And he is questionable for Game 3, but I kind of feel like the dude's going to come out and play. He dropped 29 points, even though he missed some time. But, I mean, in the end, like in the fourth quarter, this guy just stepped it up. It didn't matter that he was injured. He gave zero fucks. He went all the way. Then DiVincenzo had a solid game, 28 points. And OG Anunoby also had a good game as well. He had 28 points, but he also left the game with an injury, and he's not going to play in Game 3. But that's been the story with the Knicks all season long. I mean, they have had to battle through the injuries basically since the beginning of the season all the way through now. Brunson's been their only consistent player, and the guy has been money. Game 3 in this series is tonight, Friday night. It will be in Indiana. Like I said, the Knicks right now have a 2-0 lead over the Pacers. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Pacers at least get one of these games at home. But the Knicks are really doing what I expected them to do. They are a better defensive team than pretty much anybody in the league. But really, as opposed to the Pacers, they're going to dominate on the defensive end. And so far, they've really done that. And in the critical points of the game as well, their defense has absolutely held it down. They've made the blocks. They've made the rebounds. They've had some offensive rebounds as well. They are getting all the scores, they are knocking down all the shots. They are doing what they need to keep it moving in this series. And like I said, Game 3 is tonight in Indiana. Then moving on to the series versus the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. The Timberwolves are for real, y'all. You know, I questioned whether or not I've been questioning both them and the Thunder just because they're both young. You don't know what you're going to get from these young teams, but the Minnesota Timberwolves are proven they are a damn good team. In Game 2 earlier in the week, they smashed the Nuggets in Denver, 106-80, and I mean, this was not even close. Anthony Edwards dropped 27 points, had a phenomenal game. Karl Anthony Towns also had a phenomenal game. He had a double-double with 27 points and 12 rebounds. And, I mean, Minnesota is just dominating this series so far. They dominated both games in Denver. Game 3 is tonight, Friday, in Minnesota. So, and this is their first home playoff game in a while in this conference semis. And to be a legit team, I'm sure it's going to be rocking tonight in Minnesota. But the Nuggets, you can't count them out. They are the defending champs. They do have Nikola Jokic, who is a proven MVP caliber player. They have a deep bench, and they just know how to win. So you can't count them out yet, but the Denver Nuggets absolutely need to win Game 3 because they do not want to be down 3-0 going into the next game. But right now, Minnesota is looking for real, and they're playing excellent basketball over their division rivals, the Denver Nuggets, and they could take a solid lead tonight in Minnesota. Then the next series, we have the Boston Celtics versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. And this is the tale of two games for both teams. So in game one, Boston absolutely dominated, 120-95. And it was just straight domination. It was one of those games where it wasn't even close at any point in this game except at tip-off. Jaylen Brown had 32 points. Derek White had 25 points. Jason Tatum had 18 points and 11 rebounds. So he had a double-double. And Cleveland just absolutely disappeared in this one. But then game two, it was the exact opposite. Cleveland got the win, 118-94, and it was just straight up domination by the Cavaliers. And these are the questions that I have had all season with the Boston Celtics, because over the last couple of years, they've been that team where they've dominated the regular season, and then they hit the postseason, and once they go up against a team that just knows how to beat them, they get dominated. And this season, the story with the Celtics is they have been a very Jekyll and Hyde team where they will have this just dominating run and then boom, they'll lay an egg. And so I'm not really shocked by what I saw in game two from the Boston Celtics, but it was not even close in that one. Donovan Mitchell had 29 points, 8 assists, and 7 rebounds. Caris LeVert, he had 21 points. And then Evan Mobley had 21 points and 10 rebounds. So it was a really dominating game from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and it wasn't close. And then in the second half, they really just, boom, took off and did not look back in this series. Game three is Saturday night, and this series is tied up at 1. I do expect Boston, like I said, I think they are the much better team. I do expect them to win this series. But the way they got dominated by Cleveland, I don't know if it's going to be as easy as the Celtics thought it was going to be heading into this one. And then the final matchup we have is between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. Game one was absolutely dominated by the Thunder, 117-95. SGA had 29 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists. Chet Holmgren had 19 points and 7 rebounds, and it just was straight-up domination. You could really tell that the Mavericks are relying heavy on Luka Doncic. I expected them to, just because he is one of the top players in the league, and this is what you expect from him in the postseason, but you could tell he's been beat up the last couple of months, and it feels like every game he gets more and more and more beat up. And so we'll see if that ends up weighing heavy on him, because it's been all Doncic this entire series. Then in game two, Dallas did bounce back. They got the win 119-110, and it was all Doncic. And he actually started off the game by basically getting his feet tangled up and landing face first onto the ground and hit his face right. I mean, face first into the ground, and you could tell it was bothering him a bit. But obviously, he ended up having a phenomenal game, dropped 29 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists. PJ Washington also added in 29 points and 11 rebounds, so he did get some extra help in this one. Kyrie has yet to really show up, so I do expect him to kind of go off in one of these upcoming games in Dallas. Game 3 is going to be Saturday night, and so we are tied up at 1 in this series as well. I expected this one to go the distance, but like I said with the Mavericks, they're very, very heavy on Doncic, and nobody else has really stepped it up. You know, you got lucky with PJ Washington yesterday stepping it up, but he really needs Kyrie to come in and add some points for him, because this is going to be a difficult run for them, because Oklahoma City is not rolling over. They are playing the same basketball they have played all regular season. They look solid. They look good. That was their first loss in game two in the postseason so far, so they are actually rolling on through people. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the rest of the series, because it's obviously going to be all Doncic for the Mavericks. But, you know, there's always been players like him who have been known to step it up in the postseason and take their team to the next level. But this Oklahoma City Thunder team, they will not go quietly, and they are a deep-ass team. So then we had the postseason award, or the regular season awards, announced this week. So rookie of the year went to San Antonio Spurs, Victor Wembanyama. No surprises there. The guy straight up dominated for the majority of this season. Chet Holmgren from the Oklahoma City Thunder. He did make it an interesting race for a bit there. But Wembanyama, after the All-Star break, really took off, really never slowed down at all. And he obviously was the obvious choice for Rookie of the Year and was the unanimous choice for Rookie of the Year. So congrats to him. Defensive Player of the Year went to, I almost said Utah Jazz. He's no longer with the Jazz. Minnesota Timberwolves, Rudy Gobert. This is his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award. Can't really disagree with it. I think some people had some disagreements. I obviously had some issues because I felt like Anthony Davis probably out of, you know, in the regular season, because that's what this award is based on, had one of the best seasons of his entire career, especially defensively. He looked really solid. So in my personal and biased opinion, I was leaning towards Anthony Davis, of course, but it didn't go that way. But like I said, it's hard to argue against Gobert because he also had a phenomenal year. The guy dominated the paint, he dominated the boards, and was absolutely difficult to score on. So, and he played for one of the top teams in the league as well, one of the most consistent teams in the league. So congratulations to him. And then, of course, the MVP award for the third time in his career went to Nikola Jokic. It was practically a runaway. SGA came in second, and then Luka Doncic was voted in third place. As I said, this is Jokic's third MVP award. Kind of feel like he got robbed last year. I feel like it should be his fourth MVP award, but hey, that's just the way it goes. But this does also put him in a very small group of NBA players who have won the award three or more times. So he's won the award three times. Moses Malone of the Houston Rockets, he's won the award three times. Magic Johnson of the Los Angeles Lakers won the award three times. Wilt Chamberlain also won the award three times when he was with the Warriors and the 76ers. Larry Bird won the award three times when he was with the Celtics. Then Bill Russell won the award four times when he was with the Celtics. LeBron James has won the award four times with the Cavaliers and with the Heat. And then Michael Jordan has won the award five times with the Chicago Bulls. And then the record holder of the most MVPs is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He has won six MVP awards. He won those with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Lakers. So this definitely puts Jokic in a very, very small class of people to have won this award multiple times, three or more times. And, you know, congrats to him. I know some people were pretty upset over it, but it's always these awards, there's always arguments for certain people. And, you know, last year I felt like Jokic got robbed because the Nuggets were the best team all year, and they even won the championship and proved it. He didn't get the MVP last year, and so a lot of people were upset that SGA didn't get this year because the Thunder were the number one overall squad this year. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Jokic is just a beast. And to me, it would be really hard to vote against him in the MVP this year. But he won his third MVP. Then in the other bit of NBA news this week, Frank Vogel was fired from the Phoenix Suns. He only got 1 year with the Phoenix Suns, and he was shit-canned. Looks like they are going to hire Mike Budenholzer. He used to coach the Milwaukee Bucks. So good luck up there, dude. We'll see how that goes with the Suns, but that is yet another coach shit-canned after the end of the season. So let's go ahead and get to this week's Trop 5 list. And since I mentioned Nikola Jokic is in very rare class by winning his third MVP in his career, I decided this week's Trop 5 is going to be the Trop 5 multi-game NBA MVP award winners. Just because, I mean, yeah, these are obviously excellent basketball players. And to win the award once is a big deal, but to win it three or more times, it really just shows what a dominating figure you were, especially in your era. So I decided, let's go ahead and rank the top five of them out of the nine. I'm just going to go ahead and say Jokic did not make the list. For one, the reason why he didn't make the list is because his career is not over yet, so there's potential he could actually win more MVP awards, which would just elevate him above maybe a couple of these guys. But also at the same time, I don't think Jokic's dominance is as dominating as the five above him. Now, of course, winning three MVPs is an amazing feat. But when ranking against all these other guys in the same class, I just kind of feel like he's not at least in the top five. I don't know where he would rank amongst all of them. I just ranked the five. But and also since I've already discussed. Yeah, I think all five of these guys. Yeah, in all five of these guys, I'm pretty sure actually. I think all five of them are actually ranked in my top 10 NBA GOATs list. So I've already rattled off on the majority of their career. So I'm mostly going to be focusing on their MVP seasons and just their overall dominance of the NBA at the time. So let's get it started off. And there wasn't really a better way to title this top five. So it's the top five multi-time NBA MVP award winners. I'm probably just going to say top five NBA MVPs just because that rolls off the tongue better. But all of these guys have won at least three or more MVPs. So let's begin with number five on my top five NBA MVPs, Wilt Chamberlain. This guy's dominance was absolutely insane. So Wilt Chamberlain, he is a four-time MVP. He won when he played with the Golden State Warriors in 1959-1960. And then he played with he won his last three when he played with the 76ers in 65-66 season, 66-67 season, and the 67-68 season. So he won three straight MVPs. His first MVP that he won was actually his rookie season. He also won Rookie of the Year that year. And then just in Wilt Chamberlain's overall career, he is a two-time NBA champion. In those four MVP years, he did win a championship when he was with the 76ers in the 66-67 season, which was one of his most dominating seasons by far. But statistically, it's kind of insane to really just look at Wilt Chamberlain's statistics. If you just look at his numbers, it's absolutely insane. It's actually shitty that we don't have really a lot of footage from the majority of his career. I mean, we don't even have footage of the game where he scored 100 points. Like, the only time in the NBA somebody has scored 100 points, we don't have it on film. How shitty is that? None of us can ever rewatch that. Only the people who were there that day got to witness that shit. So a lot of Wilt Chamberlain's career, we don't even know how fucking good the dude was. But if you just look at his stats, boom, they blow you out of the water. So in his rookie year, the 1959-60 season, when he won his first MVP, he averaged 37.6 points per game and 27 rebounds per game. He averaged a double-double. Not only did he average a double-double a game that year, but like almost 40 points and almost 30 rebounds is what this dude averaged. And then just 2.3 assists per game is what he averaged there. Then his second MVP run when he was with the 76ers in the 65-66 season, he averaged 33.5 points per game, 24.6 rebounds per game, and 5.2 assists per game. So he did up his assist level a bit there, but still just averaging a double-double a game. Then his third MVP season when he won the championship with the 76ers, 66-67 season, he averaged 24.1 points per game, 24.2 rebounds per game, and 7 assists per game. So he was almost averaging a triple-double a game in that season. And then his final MVP year was in the 67-68 season where he averaged 24.3 points per game, 23.8 rebounds per game, and 8.6 assists per game. And Wilt Chamberlain, really, just his sheer dominance, he was the original, like, showboater. He was basically the beginning of just having amazing dunks and really just taking over the game. He was probably the first legitimate NBA superstar, really, because, you know, Bill Russell was a great player, But I wouldn't refer to Bill Russell as a superstar. He was just a straight-up motherfucking winner and a GOAT as well. But Wilt Chamberlain was a superstar. Wilt Chamberlain just took over games. He was all over the place, and he was just a phenomenal player and a four-time MVP and a two-time NBA champion and ranked number five on my multi-time NBA MVP award winners. Then at number four on my top five NBA MVPs, Larry Bird. He won three straight MVPs in 83, 84, 84, 85, 85, 86. Of course, those were all with the Boston Celtics. He is a three-time NBA champion as well. In those MVP years, like I said, he won three league MVPs. Two of those three, he won a championship, the 83-84 season and the 85-86 season. Now, Larry Bird, it was actually really difficult for me to put him on this list because guess what? Magic Johnson is not on the list. I did not put Magic Johnson on the list. Now, Magic Johnson was a phenomenal player, one of the greatest of all time. As a matter of fact, on my top 10 GOATs, I do put Magic Johnson above him, but this is just ranking their MVP seasons. To me, Magic Johnson had, not that Larry Bird didn't have a great team surrounding him, he did, but Larry Bird was the dude on the Celtics. When it came to the Lakers, yes, Magic was the dude, but they also had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, literally one of the greatest players of all time. I mean, you have two of the greatest top 10 players on the same exact team. So that kind of takes away from Magic. Then all the other surrounding players, because that Lakers Showtime team was much more than just Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like I said, the Celtics of the 80s also had a stacked-ass team, but Larry Bird was that dude, which is why I put him above Magic Johnson when it comes to their MVP seasons, just because Larry Bird was the dude on his team. So in his first MVP season, the 83-84 season, he averaged 24.2 points per game, 10.1 rebounds per game, and 6.6 assists per game. Then in his second MVP run in the 84-85 season, he averaged 28.7 points per game, 10.5 rebounds per game, and 6.6 assists per game. And then in his third MVP run in the 85-86 season, 25.8 points per game, 9.8 rebounds per game, and 6.8 assists per game. So for the most part, in both of the two of the three of those MVP runs, he averaged a double-double all season long, almost in the third one. But I mean, really, just Larry Bird's dominance at the time. He knew how to just absolutely take over a game. They were always in contention for the championship, and he was their dude. He was the star of that team. And that's why I do put Larry Bird's MVP seasons above Magic Johnson's MVP seasons, simply because Magic Johnson was also playing with arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all time, with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA MVPs, Bill Russell. He is an 11-time NBA champion and a four-time MVP. He won the MVP, all four of them, of course, with the Boston Celtics, since he spent his entire career with the Boston Celtics. He won his first MVP in the 1957-1958 season, second one in 1960-1961 season, third in 1961-1962 season, and his fourth and final one in the 62-63 season. So he did win three straight as well. That seems to be a pretty big theme here. Wilt Chamberlain won three straight. Larry Bird won three straight. Now we've got Bill Russell, who also won three straight. Out of his four MVPs, three of the four, he did win championships. He won championships in the 60-61, 61-62, and the 62-63 seasons. In the his first MVP run, the 57-58 season, he averaged 16.6 points per game, 22.7 rebounds per game, and 2.9 assists per game. Then his second MVP run in the 60-61 season, he averaged 16.9 points per game, 23.9 rebounds per game, and 3.4 assists per game. His third MVP run in the 61-62 season, he averaged 18.9 points per game, 23.6 rebounds per game, and 4.5 assists per game. And then in his final and fourth MVP run in the 62-63 season, he averaged 16.8 points per game, 23.6 rebounds per game, and 4.5 assists per game. So his entire career, especially in those four MVP seasons, he averaged a double-double every year. Bill Russell's another one of those guys where, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of film on him. But the film I have seen, it's amazing to watch him just, he literally would glide through the air. Watching Bill Russell, if you get a chance to watch some highlights of Bill Russell, you really should do it, just because he just would glide through the air. That's the only way to describe it, is him gliding through the air. He made it look like it was so easy to be a basketball player. And, you know, an 11-time champion, he pretty much won every single year of his career. The absolute dominance, and he was the most dominating figure for his entire career. So to dominate the league the way he did, and to me, I can never, ever disrespect the career of Bill Russell. I think a lot of people still do. I mean, out of all the players in the NBA, to me, Bill Russell has always been the most disrespected. Not just career-wise, but like on a personal level, because, you know, he grew up, he came up in a very racist era of America, and he was not liked at all, even when he was winning championships. And, you know, because in this day, if you are a fan of your team, there's no way you're going to criticize somebody of Bill Russell's stature. You're going to respect the shit out of him. And like I said, we don't see a lot of his career stats because, you know, I mean, he played in the freaking 60s, for Christ's sake. So, of course, that's a long ass time ago. And so that's tons and tons of players from the 60s all the way up to 2024, you know, that we've had. And we've got a lot of film on them. So it's really difficult for people to really grasp the dominance of Bill Russell and how amazing he was. But for me, I never, ever, ever disrespect the career of Bill Russell, because he is one of the most dominating figures to ever play this sport. And I've just always been amazed at the disrespect. I mean, I always reiterate the story about how he just got a statue in front of the Boston Celtics stadium, like in 2013, I believe it was. That's blasphemous, because, you know, I just was at the Lakers stadium, and not only did we have one Kobe statue, we're getting two more Kobe statues, and they didn't just have them. They had Kareem, they had Magic, they even had Wayne Gretzky, because, you know, that's where the Kings play. So there's like, it felt like 25 statues out there. Now there's probably only, I think, like five, but the Lakers, you know, they enshrine all their players, and every team always really does it up for their players. And to me, it's like Bill Russell always had this kind of rift with the Celtics, and I've always found, just been dumbfounded by it, because I'm just like, he's literally one of the greatest players of all time and can't even get respect, not only as a human, but you won't even respect him as a player, an 11-time champion with four NBA MVPs. But I respect the shit out of Bill Russell. I will always sing the praises of Bill Russell. And like I always say, if you have not watched any Bill Russell highlights, they are on YouTube. Google Bill Russell highlights, and it's just amazing to watch him just glide through the air with the greatest of ease, like he was a trapeze artist. It's such a beautiful game that Bill Russell played. All right, and then at number two on my top five NBA MVPs, Michael Jordan. Six-time champion, of course, and he is a five-time MVP. As a matter of fact, out of the six championships and the five MVPs, four of those MVPs were won during championship years, because it kind of feels like that's all Michael Jordan did. But, I mean, the level of dominance with scoring with Michael Jordan is insane. Even compared to Wilt Chamberlain, the dude who scored 100 points in a game, when I compared Michael Jordan's stats from his MVP years compared to Wilt Chamberlain, even Michael Jordan outscored him in points per game in some of these years. So it's insane to look at how much Michael Jordan scored during his era. So he won his first MVP in the 1987-88 season, won his second one in the 1990-91 season, won his third one in the 91-92 season, won his fourth one when he came back from retirement, his first retirement in 95-96, and then he won his last MVP in the 97-98 season. Of course, Michael Jordan is arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all time. So he, of course, has to be one of the top five, absolutely number one or two to me personally, just because his dominance. Now, I grew up in the Michael Jordan era. Michael Jordan just, he played with great teams, great players, but Michael Jordan dominated the league. He changed everything for any entertainment person in this day and age who has a brand can thank Michael Jordan. It's not just athletes who he helped make money by creating brands, but like anybody in the entertainment world who was making money off of endorsement deals and promoting shit, that is thanks to Michael Jordan and the gamble that he and Nike took on each other. And, it's just Jordan dominated. It's actually crazy that he only won five MVPs, because I kind of feel like Jordan probably could have won an MVP every single year that he played. I just kind of feel like voters tend not to want to do that. I don't want to say they collude together, but I just kind of feel like there are some years where they're like, I'm not going to vote for you because you won last year. Kind of how I feel about Jokic not getting the MVP last year. That's kind of why I feel like Jordan didn't win the MVP every year, because people are like, we can't give it to Jordan again, but whatever. So in his first season, that's the only MVP year where he did not win a championship. He averaged 35 points per game, 5.5 rebounds per game, and 5.9 assists per game. In his second MVP run in the 1990-91 season, he averaged 31.5 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, and 5.5 assists per game. Then his third MVP run in the 91-92 season, he averaged 30.1 points per game, 6.4 rebounds per game, and 6.1 assists per game. Then in his fourth MVP run in the 95-96 season, he averaged 37.7 points per game. The dude almost averaged 40 points per game after he came back from retirement. And then he averaged 6.6 rebounds per game and 4.3 assists per game. And then his fifth and final MVP year, the 97-98 year, he averaged 28.7 points per game, 5.8 rebounds per game, and 3.5 assists per game. Like I said, nobody dominated like Jordan. That's why you still hear about Jordan today. I know LeBron lovers, they can't stand it. And I know you can make arguments for LeBron being the greatest of all time. I'm actually not going to argue against it. That's fine if you think he's the greatest, but I'm sorry. If you were not around in the Jordan era, you don't know how much, like, that was all we heard about. That was all we talked about. That was all we knew. That's why when I say I'm shocked he did not win the MVP every single year he played, because that's how good he was. That's how dominating he was. Michael Jordan was the NBA in the 90s. And then finally, number one on my top five NBA MVPs, it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, if you've heard my list, my NBA GOATs list, he is my number one overall GOAT. I put him over everybody. He is a six-time champion, just like Michael Jordan. He is a six-time MVP, just like nobody else. Nobody has won six MVPs like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won three of those MVPs when he played with the Milwaukee Bucks, and three of them when he played with the Los Angeles Lakers. His first one was in 1970-71 when he was with the Bucks, the 71-72 season with the Bucks, and the 73-74 season with the Bucks. So he won three straight there. Then when he would move on to the Lakers, he would win his first MVP and fourth overall MVP in the 75-76 season. And he'd win his fifth MVP in the 76-77 season. And then he would win his sixth and final MVP in the 79-80 season. So that's just another dude who absolutely dominated. I mean, Kareem was just meant to play basketball. If you just watch him play, it's the most beautiful and insane level of play you will see. He dominated. Absolute. Talk about a dude who probably could have been MVP every year as well. It's him too. He played in an era with a dude named Wilt Chamberlain. So he played against good-ass dudes. He played in Milwaukee for a period of time and even won a championship with them. And then, of course, he played with the Showtime Lakers And then, of course, in six of these MVPs, two of them he won championships in the 1970-71 season with the Bucks, and then the 1979-1980 season with the Lakers. Those are 2 years when he won championships with his MVP years. But, I mean, really, nobody dominated the league like Kareem did when in his heyday, including when he was a college player, including when he was a high schooler. I mean, Kareem is basketball. So in his first MVP run, the 1970-71 season, he averaged 31.7 points per game, 16 rebounds per game, and 3.3 assists per game. His second MVP run, 71-72 season, he averaged 34.8 points per game, 16.6 rebounds per game, and 4.6 assists per game. His third MVP run in the 73-74 season, he averaged 27 points per game, 14.5 rebounds per game, and 4.8 assists per game. Then in the 75-76 season, his fourth MVP, he averaged 27.7 points per game, 16.9 rebounds per game, and 5 assists per game. In his fifth MVP run in the 76-77 season, he averaged 26.2 points per game, 13.3 rebounds per game, and 3.9 assists per game. And then in his sixth and final MVP season, in the 79-80 season, he averaged 24.8 points per game, 10.8 rebounds per game, and 4.5 assists per game. So in all those MVP years, he averaged a double-double a game. And like I said, this guy just dominated. It's crazy to think how much he dominated. And if you don't know, the Milwaukee Bucks have pretty much been trash other than when Kareem played for them and when right now with Giannis playing for them. But I mean, the Bucks were never a place you wanted to go. He got drafted there and he gave it his all there until he could. And then they basically worked out a deal to send him to LA, and the rest is history there. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar not only is the greatest multi-time NBA MVP, but to me, he is the greatest of all time. I mean, come on. A dude who they got rid of the slam dunk because of him, because they were like, this guy dominates too much. We got to get rid of the slam dunk. So that's where the hook shot came from. And when rules are created to prevent you from scoring because you're that dominant, and then you have to create a move that they still can't stop and you're still that dominant, hello, how can you not be the GOAT? But he's definitely the GOAT of the MVPs, and not just because he's won six, but because he really was one of the most dominating figures, especially of his era, and he played against some really damn good centers. I mean, Kareem played in an era when center was the center of attention on the team. Like, the center used to be the most dominating position on the court. Now it's mostly like the guard position or sometimes the forward position, because it's all about scoring and offense these days. But the center, I mean, as you could tell, I had Wilt Chamberlain on there. I mean, really, just look at actually these multi-time MVPs, Jokic. Power forward slash center, Kareem, center, Bill Russell, center, Wilt Chamberlain, center. So, you know, it's a dominating position, and it's not as dominating anymore. But Kareem played when it was the most dominating position. And like I said, he played against dudes like Wilt fucking Chamberlain, for Christ's sake. All right. So that's my top five for this week. And enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.